All right. Hi, everybody. So the title of my presentation for today is Flourishing Lives, Exploring the Meaning of Job Training in the Lives of Low-Income Workers. So first, this is a Public Health Association meeting. So what is the relationship between job training and health? Why should we consider this or care about it? So first, job training and health, like work and health, are linked or potentially linked through multiple pathways. One of these is access to material resources that a job could confer. Another is chronic stress, which could be improved by finding a job and being able to take it, or exacerbated through jobs that are stressful in particular ways. Second, there's currently a lot of attention on job training programs, particularly at the federal and state levels, because of high unemployment associated with the financial crisis. And third, social and economic policy interventions like job training have become increasingly common as recommendations for reducing health inequalities. And one place that we can see this is the World Health Organization's 2008 report on the social determinants of health, and that report is actually where the title for this talk comes from. They talk about the goal of having a flourishing life. A little bit of background on the project. It's a small extension of a year-long ethnographic project that I did for my dissertation in Baltimore, examining life in two job training programs. And because of the economic downturn, both of these programs had major problems with job placement. And so I was curious about what people were doing, how they were spending their time, how they were making ends meet during the period after graduating from a job training program before getting placed into the kinds of upwardly mobile positions that the job training programs were supposed to lead to. And I thought that Photo Voice would be one really interesting way of exploring one of the things that people were doing. So, I initiated a Photo Voice project with two men, Omar and Anthony, who were placed, they had been placed by their job training program into temporary positions after completing a construction training program. And the goal of this temporary position was to allow them to have a wage and build skills while waiting for an apprenticeship position that would be a sort of more solid career path forward with an upwardly mobile sense about it. And then what they were actually doing in those temporary positions was renovating an abandoned row house in East Baltimore, and I'll say a little bit more about that in a moment. Briefly, the methods followed generally a sort of standard Photo Voice methodology, but on a very, very small scale, since I was only working with two people. We started with a training where we talked about how to use the cameras, about photography, as in Michelle's project, what the kinds of things that they might take photos of and the kinds of things that they might not want to take photos of to protect their own privacy. And they were responding during the month of photography that they did to the question, how have the job training program, on the one hand, and the opportunity to work on this house influenced your life? Then I did interviews with each participant on 10 photos that they chose, and those interviews were recorded, transcribed, and analyzed for key themes. Some background on the neighborhood in which the row house renovation was taking place. East Baltimore is, as you can see in this photo, which is a photo that I took, filled with Baltimore's famous row houses. But over the last several decades, the neighborhoods within East Baltimore, because there are multiple neighborhoods there, have suffered from really significant disinvestment, a loss of middle-class jobs associated with the manufacturing industries, as well. And so now, as a result, they have extremely high rates of unemployment. So training programs, especially free job training programs that are intended to lead to upwardly mobile job opportunities, are really appealing to many members of many residents in these neighborhoods. And this is the actual row house that Anthony and Omar were working on. You can see that it looks structurally sound, but the inside was so uninhabitable when the company they were working for started work that it had to be completely gutted. And you'll see some photos of the inside of the house once I get to Anthony and Omar's photos. So some themes. As I was starting analysis on the transcripts of the interviews and the photographs themselves, a number of themes that were cross-cutting both sets of photos emerged. And so I incorporated those together, and they fit pretty well under these two larger categories that I'm calling the pleasures of work and the challenges of work. So I'll be presenting a photo or two to illustrate each of these themes. So first, acquiring skills and knowledge, and this fits under the pleasures of work. Both of the participants were really thrilled at times, it seemed, with the kinds of skills they were learning and the knowledge that they were being exposed to. And this is a photo that Omar took. And about it, he said, "I love the framing because I never knew how to build a wall. I was the general laborer, but I got involved. I was getting my tape, I was measuring. And my supervisor was always asking, 'What are you doing?' Because actually this wasn't part of his job. 'Why are you measuring that?' I'd say, 'I'm learning.' He'd say, 'Well, go ahead and learn then. It was exciting to do.'" So the next theme actually sort of links to that quote a bit. Both of the participants also talked about the uniquely nurturing nature of this particular work environment, as they had both done a number of construction odd jobs on other sites. So this is a photo, another photo that Omar took, but it's actually of Anthony and one of their supervisors. And he said that he took it because he wanted to show the team environment, which he really appreciated. And he really felt that this was unlike other work sites. Anthony portrayed a kind of different aspect of this, which is in his quote, which is, "But I feel like, to me, it feels like a brotherhood, you know? Because all of us guys, we have that bond. We graduated," he means from the job training program. "We hung in there, we stuck it out, got each other's back, and everything like that. Me and Omar, we help each other out on the job." So the next theme, there was a sense that what was pleasurable about this work in some ways was the ability to be recognized as a worker, to be recognized as part of something respectable and productive, and for lack of a better term in some ways, I'm calling this making a mark. I really love this photo because it shows very clearly the dust in the workplace environment, which was so ever-present, actually in a lot of the photos, and created some technical problems at various points. But so along the theme of making a mark, what Anthony took this photo and what he said about it was, "In a couple more months, this will be somebody's home, and I had something to do with that, like my hands, you know? This house will be a special place because it's gonna be so many bent up nails in the studs in that house. You know I did that. Whether I bent them up or whether I nailed them straight, I had a part of that." So there's a real sort of sense of pride that goes along with this. Another aspect of making a mark, I think, is the desire to be in the photos. And this is a photo of Anthony. And there were, I think, you know, being photographed at work, having other people take photographs of them really feels to me like it was part of the theme. So it wasn't something they talked about directly in the interviews, but something that definitely seemed to jump out at me as I was looking at the photographs together. Omar started work on the job before, he was hired before Anthony was, and so he was there longer. And as a result, he was given a little bit more responsibility. And those responsibilities were something that he took very seriously and that seemed to give him a lot of pride as well. So this is a photo that Omar took of the front door to the house they were working on. Omar said, "I open that door every morning and get set up for when everybody else comes. So I took that one because I'm responsible for it. And it's surprising because, you know, I'm new. Sometimes they leave materials and stuff in there, and they trust me. And they trust me to be there to do it." The theme of providing for family members or being able to provide financially for oneself is something that I expected to see a lot in the photographs, which actually did not come up all that much, but I thought I would include this one photograph of Anthony's, which is of his son. It's called My Boy. And it's a little bit of a strange photo because his son is crunching a water bottle under his neck, but so that's what that is. But Anthony, about the photo, said, I can provide for him in a way that I haven't been, in a way that I couldn't within the last couple of years. And he's referring to a period of time during which he was mostly unemployed. The physicality of the work experience came across really strongly in a lot of the photos as well. This is a photo that Omar had Anthony take of him. And about it, he said, we had a lot of wood to carry, and I didn't know it was going to be that type of labor, carrying all that wood and stuff like that. We carried everything. We carried everything by hand. Construction sites are also obviously a place with a great potential for injury, and that also came across in the photos. There were several photos, actually, that both Anthony and Omar took of ladders that were at the site. These were the ladders that connected the first floor to the second floor and the first floor to the basement before they put stairs in at the very end. And I found the number of ladder photos really remarkable. And actually, I think the two quotes, I've included quotes from both of them here, and I think juxtaposed, they really speak to the challenge of overcoming these kinds of fears in a worksite environment, and also the opportunities that this particular worksite provided. So Anthony, speaking of a past job, said, I had one job doing carpentry work, and it didn't last me 3 or 4 days because we weren't trained on a ladder that well. And the guy told me to get on the ladder, and I almost fell. So either he left the job because of the ladder, or he was fired from the job. I don't know, but it meant that he couldn't continue in that work. And then Omar said, I'd never really climbed a ladder, so I climbed up the ladder, but when it was time to come back down, I was scared. I didn't know how to climb down a ladder. But then I learned, and actually he told me a long story of a supervisor showing him multiple times how to do it, and it broke my fear of heights, and I'm not scared of the ladder no more. So the last theme that I'm going to talk about is something that I'm calling performing. Both Anthony and Omar, I think, were under a lot of pressure to perform well in the job, to show that they deserved this opportunity of the temporary position, because not everyone coming out of these programs was getting these temporary positions, and also to show that they deserved a recommendation for an apprenticeship program, ultimately. So one photo that I think really shows this well is this one, and I'll provide a little bit of background information. The project took place in February and March of earlier this year, and in Baltimore there was a huge snowstorm during that period, which happened right after they started work. So there were several days when they didn't work, and then when they finally did go back to work, the city still wasn't really up and running yet. Baltimore is not Denver in that way. This is a photo of Omar's bus stop, and this is what he had to say about it. This was the first day he went back to work after the storm. He said, I had to leave out in all that snow, and I had to walk. I mean, I had to walk a nice ways to get to the bus to get to work. So I had to leave out extra early because the buses and everything wasn't running on schedule. I had to be at work at 7:30, so that's about 5:30 in the morning. So he lived in Baltimore City, and the worksite was also in Baltimore. And what he's telling me here is that he left 2 hours to ensure that he would get to work on time. And there really was a strong sense that if you couldn't be punctual, you really couldn't be trusted to do anything. So they felt very strongly about that. So a little bit of analysis. I think in public health, we typically conceptualize the relationship between work and health as being around access to material resources and access to health coverage. We also often think of the potential for physical injuries and occupational health hazards, and also we think a lot about stress. And all of those were represented in the photos, which hopefully you can see. But I think it's really, to me it was very interesting, the emphasis in the photos on the psychological dimensions of work. And so I've highlighted here Arlene Geronimus's work showing that stress-related chronic diseases are the primary reason for excess mortality in urban American populations. And what Omar and Anthony's photos really do, I think, is give us a sort of a more intimate sense of how those stressors emerge and what some psychological experiences that can ameliorate those stressors are. In terms of the successes and challenges of using the method of PhotoVoice itself, this was the first time that I had used it. And on the success side, the men talked a lot in the training and in the interviews with me about really enjoying using the cameras and having them and having an opportunity to reflect on their experiences in the workplace. And they clearly had had a lot of work experiences that they hadn't openly reflected on that came up in the interviews. So the interviews went on for a really long time. I think the photos give unique insight also into certainly the physical, but some of the psychological experiences of entry-level work at a construction site as well. And then on the challenges side, as I sort of alluded to earlier, there were some technical problems with the cameras and dust at the site getting into the cameras so that the cameras wouldn't work at times. And then there was a tension around wanting to take photos at work, wanting to document things, but not wanting to or feeling comfortable spending work time, even just a few minutes, on something that wasn't work. Luckily, over time, the supervisors seemed to loosen up about that and were fairly supportive of the project. Wanting to be in photos rather than taking photos, this was not really a challenge, but just a little bit of a tension that the emphasis was so much on photos of the workers themselves that sometimes it was hard to tell what else was going on, so we had to talk about that a little bit. And I think there are complexities with doing this sort of work as research in conjunction with IRBs. It's not a type of research, at least, that the IRB at my institution was familiar with. It took a lot of going back and forth to sort of talk about what it meant to do this kind of work. And they were really uncomfortable with letting participants take credit for their photos, which was something that Omar and Anthony really wanted to do. In addition to being in the photos, they really wanted their names associated with them. And also, the last challenge I would say is that this was a very small and very short project, and I think we might have started to see different types of themes emerge if their house renovation project had gone on longer, if our project had gone on longer. So not so much a challenge, but perhaps a limitation. This is the house just about a week before the residents moved in, the house that Anthony and Omar worked on. And this is my last slide. I wanted to thank the Job Opportunities Task Force in Baltimore, which helped arrange for this work and introduced me to Omar and Anthony, the Community Health Planning and Policy Development section for the financial support, and also the inspiration to do this particular kind of project, and most of all, of course, Omar and Anthony themselves. So thanks.
Has Mariellos arrived? Okay, for those of you who just joined us, one of our panelists was not able to make it, so we'll spend the next 15 minutes with some questions for the first panelist. I think they did an excellent job of talking about the experiences that they had in their photojournalism project, and they really demonstrate in great and rich detail the kinds of social justice issues that we're grappling with at this conference and the kinds of issues of living with a disease and gender issues and stigma and job training and even housing and, you know, and living in low-resource communities that their work really highlights. So if you have any questions, I'd like to ask you guys to come up and respond to questions given to you. And you know, they both had challenges, and if you want to talk to them about the kinds of resources it took to be able to do this work, you know, please ask our two panelists.
I have a question for Jennifer. On the last challenge that you have regarding the IRB complexity, was it because of confidentiality that they didn't want Omar and Evan to take credit for the pictures?
Yeah, so the question was about IRB and confidentiality. That was definitely part of it. They were worried about the subjects not really understanding that they could be disclosing their own identities through the photos, but they were also, they wanted to make sure that there was a consent process in place for people who appeared in the photos. But also there was, I think the bigger issue was that they didn't see this as research, and so they weren't sure how to handle it. So it just took a lot of conversation back and forth.
By the IRB?
Yeah, sorry, the IRB.
What did either of you do with the pictures afterwards, especially, did you take them to policymakers? Did you do any kind of advocacy with it?
I have not done that yet. So the first step was to send all of the photos to the Job Opportunities Task Force, which sort of helped to set up the work
which does a lot of advocacy at the state level in Maryland. So they have the photos. They also help to kind of oversee and run one of the job training programs that people came through. So our hope was that the photos could somehow help to build resources for those kinds of programs, and particularly for temporary positions or for finding jobs in which to place people. And I guess those are the main things that I've done.
Michelle, did you want to answer this?
I just wanted to say quickly about the IRB that I've worked with IRBs at two universities around this project and have zero problems getting the project through. So I know you did, we talked about it, and it may just depend where you are. So if you're thinking about doing this, I wouldn't have the IRB, I wouldn't present the IRB as something that might stop you, which I thought it would before I did. In Philadelphia, we, while we were in our group sessions, would talk with people about what they might want to do with their photos. We knew we were limited resource-wise, so some people, you know, we would suggest, you know, maybe you want to put a book together and show so-and-so, or we would brainstorm sort of who they wanted to show. We also did have a small exhibit where people, the women came and saw the photos and women could invite other people, so they were sort of disseminated that way as well. And like I said, in the project I did, there were some sort of small success stories where people did make changes or get things changed. The end of our project coincided with me changing jobs. So in addition to having little resources, we kind of put that exhibit together pretty quickly and couldn't do any more in Philadelphia. You know, we're trying perhaps to even do some exhibits of this project in Missouri, in addition to the new work I'll be doing. So we did do what we could to disseminate it. I think you need to be creative, especially with small budgets, in terms of you might not be able to have the super fancy exhibit, but there are still ways you can exhibit the photos where the participants enjoy it and it's low budget.
I had a question back here.
It was me, but it was a similar question, just kind of what were the general or greater implications, or how do you view photo voice as kind of affecting or addressing these social issues on a larger scale in the communities or with the populations you're working with? But you sort of
there was a question right here.
I guess I have a follow-up on the same thing, mostly from Michelle. It sounds like that that this opportunity is really powerful for the women that were taking pictures. Did you have funding, or were they able to keep pictures themselves, or to keep some of the resources that they had?
Yeah, we definitely budgeted that in. So they would choose different photos they wanted to discuss, and then any photo that we exhibited, plus more, I sent to them different sizes. Some of them I would blow up for them. So they gave as much input as they could with that in terms of what they wanted. And then we tried to throw some other ones in there too, because it was pretty affordable to get stuff, you know, to get the actual photos. So they did have pictures of everything.
And they also got to keep their cameras with the cord, so they could like upload the photos wherever they wanted. So they got to keep all of their photos.
Yeah, that's a good point. And with this population, it wasn't like everybody had access to a computer, but a lot of them did. So we did what we could to show them how, or to get them the hard copies, or show them how then they could go to CVS and get them, you know.
And Emma, did you want to answer that as well?
Yeah, I guess I had a similar experience where we were able to let the participants keep the cameras and all of the supporting material. We had conversations about how to use them at home or how to use them at the library. And we did some printing of photos for them, but they also seemed to really enjoy just having access to the electronic photos, knowing that they had them.
There are a few more questions back here in the back.
Can you kind of describe how you went about securing cameras? And I'm interested that you were able to give the participants cameras. It's something that we're looking at right now, and getting some pushback internally about doing that as sort of payment for their time. So. In terms of types of cameras or how you were able to purchase, and just really kind of nuts and bolts there?
Well, we were both lucky in that we had financial support from the section. So that allowed us to buy the cameras. And I actually consulted a lot with Michelle to figure out what kinds of cameras she had used, and we ended up using the same camera. Which,
Kodak Easy Share. And we did have some issues with. I'm not sure if this is exactly what you're asking, but, you know, we had some issues with people being concerned about just keeping the camera safe and would it be a target for theft. And One of the things we learned is that going forward, you want to budget some kind of little carrying case or something, even if it's extremely cheap, because they would like keep it in the box or like
under their mattress.
Yeah, they would like, you know, and we were sort of like, I didn't want to, based on some other negative experiences I've had in the past, I didn't want to advise people to carry this camera around in the box, because I actually had some problems before where participants were accused of stealing. I didn't want them to be accused of stealing it in the store, unfortunately, because I had had that happen before with another project. So a carrying case of some sort would be helpful, and just talking with them about how to keep it safe or where they might want to bring it and they might not. I will say, we only were working with 10 women, but nobody, there was one person who had a problem. She had this, I don't know, something strange would always happen to her camera. So she was an exception, but everybody else had no problems ultimately keeping it safe, and they all lived in fairly dangerous environments.
And administratively, there was full support. I think that's the pushback we're getting. It's just administrative.
That they shouldn't be able to keep the camera?
Giving somebody a camera, yeah, for their time.
Well, it's such a key part of this project in that you are, you know, just trusting someone with the camera in itself has effects on them. So if you can voice that at all. I mean, I'm happy to share any of my IRB materials because, like I said, I've been successful, so we can exchange information. But it's a very important part of the project for someone to be trusted with that camera and to be able to keep it. So it's you know, I'm not sure exactly why they're giving you pushback, but it's unfortunate they don't get it.
Yeah, well, Health and Welfare, the gift shop that Health and Welfare is giving my camera, so it doesn't look really good.
I would, I mean, what we argued in that situation was that we didn't get very much pushback either, but the cameras themselves were pretty inexpensive.
Yeah.
They were $70, $70 or $80. And when you think about the amount of time the participants are putting into the project, it really is minimal compensation.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Question in the back?
Well, I was just going to say, I have heard in other cases that when they're not, people aren't able to distribute the digital cameras, they're using, I mean, it's less reliable, but I have heard of people using the disposable ones. I mean, sometimes it's a, I mean, if you have to get to the point where it's not doing the project or not, I mean, that's been an option for some people in the way to spread.
And we considered that, but we really wanted to go the route of digital cameras. We really wanted to leave the capacity and the cameras in the community. So as a section, we felt strongly about that. Is there a question?
Yes. Could I ask if you could elaborate with you on the methods of doing the qualitative analysis? I got from your presentation that you had them take the pictures, and then you interview them and had them speak about each of the pictures, and you then capture that into a software like FSTI and encode the data, or how was that?
Sure. So I did not use software because I had two very long interviews. And the interview, I would say in both cases, the first 45 minutes to an hour was just about the experience of working at the site to help contextualize the photos and about their past work experience and their experience in the job training program itself. And then the next 45 minutes to an hour was about the individual photos. So I used a number of different approaches for thinking about how to represent as much of that narrative data as possible. But ultimately, for a very short presentation, the sort of big headlines just kind of pop out at you in terms of what people are talking about in the interviews. And so I went with those for the purposes of the presentation. But I think I will do a more detailed analysis for a paper.
I think this is a very good question, and you get a lot of complex data from these projects. So essentially what you have is textual data, because we had group sessions, so we take concerns for items. So we had textual data, we had photographic data, and again, for just ease of trying to like make your way around this kind of monster, we just went with analyzing the textual data. I mean, although Janae started to analyze the photographic data, because there were different themes in the photographs alone separated from the text, but we just didn't get to a point where we did something with it. I think, you know, I'm saying this too, I don't know that thematic analysis is the best way to go with this, because we just kind of took the text, did a pretty traditional thematic analysis, but I actually think the narratives are a bit stronger if you kind of take more of a narrative approach by just sort of taking apart the stories, and then you can kind of examine what's going on for each person. But in my first run through, I wanted to look at the theme. So actually in publishing the data, I'm probably going to do two different papers, where one's a thematic analysis and one's a narrative analysis.